From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Georgia was in the playoff a year ago. It stands to reason that there'd be plenty of predictions for Georgia to be back in that spot here again in 2018, and that has indeed been the case. But most of these predictions for UGA in the playoff seem to come with an asterisk, seem to come with a bit of a caveat, if you will. Georgia will be in the playoff, but only under certain circumstances, according to some here in the national media. And I think the conventional wisdom on Georgia on this might actually be wrong. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. It'll set us up for our conversation today. Chris Doering, the former Florida wide receiver, who, despite the fact that he's an ex-Gator, is actually a pretty good analyst for the SEC Network. He's a friend of us here on Dog Nation Daily as well. He's been on the program before. On TV recently, he made his case for Georgia being in the college football playoff along with another SEC team, Alabama. Here is Doering being questioned by Peter Burns on that topic. Take a listen.
Here's the thing. I see both of those teams going undefeated. And if they get to the SEC championship game and it's a very close one down to the end, I could make an argument for both of those guys.
Even Georgia with losing Roquan Smith.
There's eight starters on their defense. We talked about Alabama's defense earlier. Georgia loses a bunch on that side of the ball. They lose a bunch of production at the running back spot. Is it too soon for us to give Kirby Smart the kind of benefit of the doubt that we give Nick Saban when it talks about replacing starters?
So I think it's really interesting. Chris Doering says, hey, I've got Georgia in the college football playoff for 2018, but they go, as what I'm assuming based on what he says there, the sort of number two SEC team along with Alabama. It's Georgia back in the playoff with the same SEC team who they went with a year ago, Alabama. It's worth pointing out here that Athlon Sports essentially had the same prediction. They had Alabama winning the SEC and Georgia making the college football playoff as the second team in from the SEC here this postseason, along with Ohio State and Clemson. So a couple national outlets, one a speaker for SEC Network owned by ESPN, another the Athlon Sports saying, we got Georgia in the playoff, but we've got Georgia in the playoff as an additional SEC team along with the defending national champion Alabama. Even the Sporting News has been kind of in on this mix as well. While Bill Bender writing for the Sporting News didn't officially have Georgia in the college football playoff, he certainly had Georgia being very close to being that team. And back when he joined us back in the summer, he also kind of explained the same thing of much the same way that Chris Doering thinks it's both Alabama and Georgia back in the postseason again. And Athlon Sports officially predicts it'll be Alabama and Georgia back in the college football playoff. Bill Bender, who makes his own predictions for the Sporting News, when he joined us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, said he was very tempted to do the exact same thing.
The hardest part for me doing these bowl projections was not putting both of them in. Because if I had a first team out, I think it would be Georgia. I do see a scenario where, and I have to go back and look, but I think the first 3 weeks of the playoff rankings last year, Georgia and Alabama were 1-2. So to me, that the possibility of both of them getting back to the playoff, you know, people are going to get mad about that. But if they're both undefeated and play in Atlanta and it's a close game, both teams will go to the playoff.
Now, this is one of those weird moments when it sounds like what Bill Bender says there and what Athlon Sports wrote and what Chris Doering said on the SEC Network, it sounds like all of this should be considered a compliment by UGA fans. Hey, you got some folks who are thinking you're getting back to the playoff, or your favorite team's getting back to the playoff here this season. But there's also a way to look at this that's sort of not quite so complimentary. And frankly, it's a little irritating that some people seem to be saying that the only way Georgia gets to the playoff here this season is if the committee once again takes two SEC teams, because it seems to be this sort of hard conventional wisdom here that Alabama is the best team in the SEC and Georgia is playing for second place in comparison to Crimson Tide. And I guess the purpose of me sort of starting with this topic here today on the program is to say that I don't necessarily think that's the case. I don't necessarily think that's going to be true. Now, it's not a guarantee in my mind that Georgia beats Alabama when the two teams play, if they do indeed do that in the SEC championship game in December. But it's not as impossible to imagine as seemingly some of the national punditry seems to suggest it is. Now, for what it's worth, at first blush here, it almost seems like Kirby Smart agrees with some of the conventional thought about Georgia. Replacing Nick Chubb, replacing Sony Michel, replacing Roquan Smith, Lorenzo Carter, and Davin Bellamy. You've got a whole crop of ex-leaders who are gone, and new leaders or new sort of best players are set to emerge. And it sounds like in the early days of summer practice, Kirby's challenging that new group of guys who will fill those big shoes to step up and play well. And in fact, Kirby Smart recently said this on that subject.
The biggest concern I got is that the best players play the best, and that probably hadn't happened so far in camp. We got some guys that I consider to be really good players that aren't playing up to their potential, but we've also got a lot of players who were twos and threes last year that I think are playing pretty well. So we got some good competition going on out there, and I'm excited about that.
So there's a lot to unpack from that comment there, and the first part of it I think a lot of national media members sort of grab onto of, well, Georgia can't be better than Alabama because we've seen Alabama replace talent over and over again. We haven't seen this version of Kirby Smart's Georgia do that, and simply there are too many good players gone from last year's team to expect Georgia to be just as good as it was in 2017. But it's the last part of that comment that I think gets lost in some of the national media, and it's the last part of that comment that I think really speaks to why Georgia's actually, even though it's be ranked in the top five in all the major polls and in most of the unofficial polls as well. Even with all of that, I think that Georgia is still, to a degree, an underrated team, because I think the guys that Kirby Smart's talking about as the number twos and number threes, those second and third string players who are practicing pretty well right now, I just simply think the national media either doesn't know who they are or doesn't realize the impact they're capable of making. But if you listen closely to Kirby Smart, he'll tell you that. If you listen close to Kirby Smart, he's been very clear about the kind of competition that's going on at Georgia practice right now, and some guys who aren't very famous at the moment could be household names by the end of the season. Because as Kirby Smart explains, we may think we know a few of these Georgia starters, but there are a whole lot of other spots that are still very much up for grabs, and the battle for those spots has been pretty heated apparently thus far. Here's more of Kirby.
You got to think about it. There's only a few spots where you could say, well, that guy's a pretty solid starter. Well, some of those guys aren't living up to their billing. They're not practicing the right way, and we've done as much as we can to encourage them to practice better, because the competition level that's out there is more intense. There's more good players across the board. Now, a lot of them don't know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing, and they got to figure that out, but they flash, which in the time I've been coaching, what you see is flashes. When you see a guy flash, you say he's got it in him if he knows what to do. We just got to coach him up to the point where we make it simple enough that the best players can play.
I take that very seriously from Kirby Smart when he says some of the young guys are pushing some of those veterans and potentially, you know, flashing in such a way that means they could be getting a lot of playing time this fall. I take that very seriously. I take Kirby Smart at his word on that. It's one of the reasons why I think this sort of conventional wisdom that Georgia's only the second best team in the SEC in comparison to Alabama, I'm not quite sure that's necessarily going to be the case. And I think the national media could get educated on the level of young talent on the Georgia roster here pretty quickly. Because one of the things that this level of young talent does give Kirby Smart the luxury and the freedom to do is that he can hold the guys that we think we do know about, the veterans, either the guys that contributed and played last year or the guys that have been around Georgia for a while now, this level of young talent, this elite crop of rising sophomores and incoming freshmen gives Georgia a chance to make the practices even more intense, because it's intense practices that were the hallmark of the Alabama program for years and years and years. And as Georgia sort of tries to push Alabama off that perch at the top of the SEC, it's that same level of intensity at practice is the pathway towards doing that. In fact, you hear Kirby Smart challenges veterans in much the same way I just described virtually every time he speaks to the media so far here this month. Here's another example of it.
I don't know. You call it what it is, but I know as I look out there, there's a couple guys that you would say, okay, this is the guy that maybe played really well last year, and he's not playing to the level that I think he can play to, and that's probably one of the scariest things that could happen to our team. But the good news is, in a lot of those positions, there's a guy just as talented behind him that's scratching and clawing, or maybe just got here and is fighting for playing time, and that excites me because they're really eager to learn, and they're fighting to learn, whereas sometimes you get a casual nature about you if you think you know everything or you think you kind of understand everything. So we've had to have some talks about that with some guys.
The point here for me is I believe the national media will soon learn what I believe that Kirby Smart already knows, that there are guys on this roster who are not well known now who are just as good as some of the players that people think around the country they do know about the University of Georgia. And the overall bottom line here is that for me, this is both sort of an emotional and a practical conversation. The emotional thing is, why does everybody become so quick to assume that Georgia's going to play second fiddle to Alabama here in the SEC? After all, the Dogs are the reigning SEC champion, something Alabama wasn't able to do a year ago, even if Alabama did beat Georgia in overtime head-to-head when they played in January. There's also a practical consideration here, though, as well, too, that, you know, the pathway to the playoff that includes, once again, two teams in the SEC, that's probably not that dependable of a road to travel down here this season. That may not be that realistic of a scenario. After all, as Bill Bender explained, there'll be incredible pushback if there's two teams from this league in the playoff once again. The best, most trustworthy way of getting back in the college football playoff is for Georgia to play Alabama in December head-to-head and knock off the Crimson Tide. And guess what I'm trying to say here is the chances of that happening, I think, are far greater than some of the national media may realize. Good to have you with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. My name's Brandon Adams, and I am glad you got to us today, no matter how you're here, on video, live, every morning at 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter feed, on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, Apple Podcasts, the Google Podcast Player with the Android devices, the worldfamousdognation.com. We're just glad you're here, and thankful to Marco's Pizza for bringing it all to you. And, of course, Marco's got that great offer for you right now. They invite you to take advantage of two medium, two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. And that's a great deal on pizza, which is sort of a nice way to sort of get into the conversation already. But listen, it gets even better when you realize it's not just any pizza. This is authentic Italian-quality pizza made every store, every day, the Italian way at Marco's.com. I'm talking about that Gianmarco family recipe and the sauce, the three cheeses blended, melted together. Boy, I'm hungry for it already, and you'll love it too. And thank you all for those of you who continue to reach out to me on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily to say how much you're enjoying Marco's Pizza. That's a huge lift for us here to know that you're having a great time the same way we are with Marco's Pizza being a part of our program each and every day. All right, we've got Mike Griffith coming up in just a moment here. We're going to talk to him about a lot of subjects. One of the things I'm going to get into tomorrow on the show is some of the stuff that Georgia safety Richard LeCount had to say to the media when he spoke yesterday evening. I think Mike was in a good position to capture a lot of that on video yesterday, so we're going to hear from Mike on what he thought about Richard LeCount, other subjects. That's coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, let me deal with an injury situation. You know, when Kirby Smart spoke on Saturday, he let us know a couple of the guys that were sort of banged up and dealing with some stuff. At the time, we didn't really quite know the severity, but one of the names that Kirby did mention was defensive back Tyreek McGee along with Eric Stokes. In fact, here was Kirby giving us that update from Saturday.
Eric Stokes, I think, cramped up a little bit. Tyreek McGee had a little foot injury, but I don't know the results of that yet. Those two things were not, they didn't seem serious. We'll know more later on, but you go into these scrimmages a little more worried because your guys on the ground more often seem like we came out all right.
Seems like we came all out all right. I guess there is some new details, though, on Tyreek McGee. 24/7 Sports is reporting that Tyreek McGee likely to miss 4 to 6 weeks with what's being called a foot injury. Not more specific than that at the moment, but a foot injury apparently going to keep Tyreek McGee out for the next 4 to 6 weeks. And I think this is significant for the Georgia secondary because of the role that Tyreek McGee was playing. And to give you kind of an example of kind of how he was fitting into the Georgia secondary, I want you to hear from both Kirby Smart and Mel Tucker on this topic for a moment because it seems pretty obvious that they were going to use Tyreek McGee in kind of a versatile role where he plays a multitude of positions. Kirby Smart was very clear about that. That was one of the things they liked best about Tyreek McGee was the fact that they could use him in more than just one way. And now for the next 4 to 6 weeks, they won't have him in that role. And here's what Kirby Smart thought that role was going to be.
We've moved Tyreek McGee around, who we think is one of our best four or five defensive backs. So he's played some corner. He's played some nickel star. We'll work him at safety some.
Yeah, so working him at safety, working him at cornerback, and Mel Tucker, for what it's worth, feels the same way, that when you've got a guy that can play both the safety and the cornerback position, that's an incredible value for Georgia, and once again, a value that the Dogs, apparently at least for the next few weeks, are going to be missing. Here is more from Mel Tucker on that.
That's huge if you have a utility guy like that that's a good player. You don't want to be a jack of all trades, a master of none, so it takes a unique type of guy to be able to play multiple positions and be able to produce at a high level. And we think Tyreek is that type of player. And so far that he's shown that he can handle that, you could relate him somewhat to Aaron Davis's role. I mean, Aaron Davis played every position in the secondary for us. I think good secondaries have those guys that can play multiple positions and can be problem solvers. And it gives you the ability to play the type of coverages you need to play when you need to play them.
I talked a lot off the top of the show about Georgia's chances of being in the college football playoff. I think one of the biggest concerns for UGA in getting back to that goal is the Georgia secondary. And that was probably true even before Tyreek McGee's injury. But if he's missing you know, a portion of time that takes him off the field for the beginning part of the season. I think that's a big deal for Georgia to overcome. I'll also remind you what we talked about on Friday's episode of our program, where we mentioned the role that freshman, now cornerback, playing exclusively at corner, according to Mel Tucker, Tyson Campbell's going to play here. I think that rising freshman here, especially with Devon Wilson's injury, becomes really, really crucial to this storyline here, because that Georgia secondary is one of those groups that we're still trying to see fill out with elite players at every spot. You feel good about one of your safeties. You feel good about one of your cornerbacks. You think that Richard LeCount could be a rising star, but that still leaves the nickel spot and the other cornerback very much open for discussion. And as of right now, Tyreek McGee not able to fill that role. That is a storyline worth watching. Now, before I get on Mike Griffith to the program, speaking of Tyreek's, let me turn the attention to recruiting here just for a moment, because Tyreek Stevenson, the four-star defensive back from down in South Florida, thought to be one of the prime targets for UGA here this season, he teased an announcement on social media yesterday. I want to show you this if you're watching us. It's on Twitter. He says, big news coming soon. Stay tuned. I don't think Tyreek has to worry about that at all. Georgia fans definitely going to be staying tuned, and a lot of other college football fans as well, to the decision made by Tyreek Stevenson. I think he's one of the biggest positions of need for Georgia in its 2019 class, and one of the targets I think that Georgia's probably the most interested, certainly a fan favorite among many UGA fans. We'll watch that and see how it goes. And by the way, we'll cover this story tonight on Before the Hedges, actually this afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern time, Before the Hedges returns on all the Dog Nation video channels and on podcast as well. We'll talk about Tyreek Stevenson and the DJ Daniel announcement on Thursday. That's all coming up on Before the Hedges this afternoon at 3 p.m. here. Myself and Jeff Sintel looking forward to doing that with you. But that's later on. For now, let's turn our attention to the Dogs on the field, and let's get ready to welcome in Mike Griffith here to Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. Glad to have you with us.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
One of the hardest working men in show business joins us here now. It is Mike Griffith, doing a great job of covering all the twists and turns of Georgia practice here this month for DogNation.com. I've loved his videos. I've enjoyed his written work as well. He has really been great and all over the place. And Mike, first of all, thanks for being back with us again this morning. I appreciate you being with us and hope you're doing well.
Yeah, all well, PA.
Yeah, good to hear. And I was saying before you joined us that I thought that Richard LeCount's moment with the media yesterday, speaking to reporters, I thought that was among the most fascinating conversations with the Georgia player we've heard so far this year. You know, Kirby Smart's obviously been pretty outspoken about what he wants more of from LeCount, what he thinks LeCount is capable of doing. You wrote a very provocative piece about that at DogNation.com last week. What did you make of LeCount meeting with you and the other contingent of Georgia reporters yesterday?
Well, I thought it was a great glimpse into, you know, how college football works. You know, so many times a coach will publicly challenge or criticize a player, and we all assume the worst, that, oh, the player's in the doghouse, the coach is angry. But the reality of it is different players are motivated different ways, and Kirby wouldn't have challenged Richard publicly if he didn't know that Richard could take it and if he didn't know that it would be effective. And you saw in that interview with Richard LeCount, and you know, in its entirety that's posted on Dog Nation, just how resilient of a young man this is, just how confident of a young man this is. And therefore, it's going to take Kirby getting loud. It's going to take Kirby challenging Richard to get the most out of him. Clearly, Kirby Smart is not going to lower the bar. That tells you he has great expectations for Richard LeCount.
Well, I talk to Georgia fans every day, Mike, as you know, and I think the one thing I gather from speaking to them is that LeCount's one of the most popular players on this team. It goes back to the 2017 recruiting class when he was really the leader that sort of corralled that class together. It's been sort of described that he was one of the first people to really buy into Kirby Smart's vision for the program, and so that's kind of the backdrop for all of this. Is there are a lot of Georgia fans really hoping to see a lot of good things from LeCount this season because he's just such a big fan favorite. I think the conversation that LeCount had yesterday makes him even more of a fan favorite with many of those same UGA fans, because when you listen to LeCount, Mike, what you realize is this isn't Kirby Smart versus Richard LeCount. This is Kirby Smart and Richard LeCount sort of pulling in the same direction, or sort of swimming in the same direction. They both want the same thing. They want the best for LeCount as a player and collectively the best for Georgia as a team here. And to see the sort of business-like approach that LeCount took to all this of, hey, you know, I wouldn't be here if I, you know, didn't think I could handle all this kind of stuff, and essentially – kind of keeping his eye where it needs to be on the, you know, ultimate prize here. I feel like that LeCount, who's already popular, I feel like he earned himself a lot more fans yesterday. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree, and you're right. I mean, he was the first player to commit to Kirby, and so therefore there will always be that special bond, and he is a very charismatic individual. I liked what he said about wanting to be coached hard. You know, nowadays you hear so much about, you know, I'll throw it out there, you know, the millennials that don't want to be coached hard, that don't want to be told anything, players who cry about, you know, well, I didn't, you know, nobody came to me, my feelings are hurt now, you know, and what that does around college football. And, you know, to hear a guy like LeCount say, you know what, that's just coaching. You know, for Coach Smart to say those things, good and bad, that's coaching. He says, I would be disappointed if I wasn't coached hard and pushed. And, you know, that's good. And you're right, Richard being a leader, other teammates need to hear that. Other young players, you know, Kirby was buzzing around there yesterday like a mad hornet. I wrote about that in practice. And, you know, he was jumping in some faces and getting in people's throats and letting them know what he wanted. He was challenging those young guys. Listen, when it's 90 degrees out and you're tired, it's the dog days of fall camp, you know, the head football coach knows what he's doing, Brandon. You know, he was a player at Georgia. He went through these same practices on the same field. He understands how to motivate these young men, and that's why I thought this, as you pointed out, this LeCount-Kirby Smart exchange was so fascinating, and I think it says a lot about Georgia football.
So let me stay on the subject of the defensive secondary here for a moment. I talked about the Tyreek McGee injury before you joined us, and I think this is significant for Georgia. I mean, as has been explained now, McGee plays a number of roles for Georgia, wears a number of hats as a potential cornerback and a safety. But, Mike, the secondary overall is my biggest concern here for UGA. I think that McGee missing practice time here and assuming he misses some time at the beginning of the season, I think that puts a bigger spotlight on Tyson Campbell. I've had some people in our comment section say, don't forget about Mark Webb and the spotlight this is going to put on him here as well. But there are a lot of position groups, Mike, that I know are national championship level for Georgia. The secondary is one of those I'm still waiting to find out about, and things don't get any easier with Tyreek McGee missing some time, do they?
Yeah, you know, depth is a question there, Brandon. You know, they got a couple of first-team All-SEC picks there with J.R. Reed and DeAndre Baker, but to your point, you don't want to lose anybody, especially a guy who can, you know, wear, like you said, a lot of different hats. But this is temporary. I mean, I think he'll be back by October. I mean, it's, he wasn't going to start, but certainly he was going to play some snaps. It's never good, but it could be a lot worse. It's a foot injury. It's not a knee. It's not an ACL. It's not a shoulder. You're talking about one backup player out of 150 snaps in a scrimmage, which is pretty remarkable. You know, even Kirby, when I asked him about it Saturday, he said, you know, I feel like that's pretty unscathed. Now, he didn't know the extent of McGee's injury at that time, but even so, that's relatively minor when you take a look around the SEC and see some of the names that are going down and, you know, take inventory of the players that have missed time. So I'm not saying it's a good thing. Maybe pointing out the silver lining that, you know, Georgia was able to get in 150 snaps, and that was the only, you know, injury of significance that came out of it. There'll be another scrimmage this Saturday where, you know, Kirby will have to hold his breath a little bit for a few snaps. I doubt they'll go one-on-ones for 60 plays or 50 plays like they did last Saturday. But there's more work ahead. And you know, it's one of the things you have to go through because this Georgia team is still kind of shaken out. We're still learning, and the coaches are still learning, what's the identity and who are these players that are going to step up on defense.
Yeah, that's really true. And, you know, along those lines, you actually wrote something about what we're still learning concerning this Georgia team the other day. And one of the things you mentioned is, you know, the dynamic involving the offense and what Demetrius Robertson, the transfer wide receiver, who we now know is eligible, what his role is going to be on this team. And I made a point earlier in the week, Mike, that I think that Demetrius Robertson is going to play a huge role in this Georgia offense. I think he's going to be UGA's leading receiver. I actually got some pushback from Georgia fans on that regarding whether he really would outpace Terry Godwin, assuming he's healthy and ready to go here very soon. Mecole Hardman, who's also a big fan favorite. I got some pushback from some Georgia fans about the level to which I'm touting Demetrius Robertson here, but I think that Robertson is going to play a major role for UGA. I think he can make the ultimate difference here for this offense and truly being at that top level here. I mean, you see him in person, at least in a brief glimpse during practice. What do you make of how you think that Robertson's going to be used by Georgia and ultimately how he fits into this offense?
Well, he's electric, and you're right. You know, there's a lot to be determined yet in terms of, you know, what does Jim Chaney want to do with the personnel packages? I mean, we can list all the five-star players at running back and receiver, and let's not forget two very, very good tight ends. But they can't all be on the field at once. So what's it going to be? Are we going to see four receivers and no tight ends, or two tight ends and two receivers, or three receivers and one tight end and one back? And how much are they going to throw to the running backs? Will they start with two backs and put one in motion? There's a lot of competition, and not just within the position groups, but from one position group to another. You know, for example, you know, is James Cook going to warrant some snaps out of the backfield as a receiver? I don't know, but he's not competing with DeAndre Swift for that snap as much as he may be competing with a tight end. They've got to determine what the best personnel package is. So as to your point, you know, about Robertson, I think it will be answered by defensive coordinators. And here's what I mean by that. They can't shade both sides of the field.
Yeah.
They can't double cover every receiver. So they got to pick their poison. Is it going to be Godwin? Is it going to be Demetrius? How about Riley Ridley? This guy had six catches in the championship game, DA. He looks like the first guy to catch a ball in every practice to me. And I might add, he caught a 50-yarder from Jake Fromm in stride at the start of that period as I looked over my shoulder and the media was marching up the field. So I wouldn't tell Ridley out of that discussion. And do I think he's a difference maker? I do, because of the speed. Because when you've got a guy with that track speed and that type of quickness, it just scares the hell out of these defensive coordinators. And they got to set that safety. You know, that thought about moving that guy up into the box, let's play him a little closer to the line, you can't do that. Because a guy like Demetrius Robertson will make you pay. And so will Mecole Hardman. And Godwin is such a shifty receiver that can get open. And Ridley looks so physical. I'm telling you, this Georgia offense, if they can find that bell cow back, that dependable back that can go between the tackles, they've got it all.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And let me follow up on the Demetrius Robertson thing here for a moment, because like the one thing I have heard some Georgia fans say here is, you know, he had 50 catches going back to 2016. I think that was the number. And people will say, well, yeah, that came in an offense out there in Berkeley that was looking to be a lot more up-tempo and throw the ball a lot more than Georgia's likely going to here in 2018. And, Mike, that's probably true. My point here is the experience that Robertson gained by hauling in 50 balls, that experience still counts, right? I mean, he's got a lot of experience, you know, coming up with catches and moving chains, and I think he utilized that experience to his advantage here. Even if it's an offense that's very different, he was targeted a lot in that offense, which even in the sort of different brand of football that'll be played in the SEC here, I think he can still use that experience to his advantage, even if it's not a carbon copy of exactly what he's going to see in the SEC. Do you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and the fact that he's a transfer, a guy who's been in college 2 years that knows how to manage his time, and it's probably why Kirby said he's picking up the offense so fast. And you know, that's why Kirby, you know, the other day after that scrimmage, there were probably four or five Demetrius Robertson questions. And at some point, I was waiting for Kirby Smart to say, guys, let's just talk about. He just kept going, Brandon.
Yeah.
Kirby was excited. He didn't have any problem talking about Demetrius Roberts. So that's what told me, okay, this guy really is a part of the offense. And the fact that Kirby was willing to answer all those questions, very telling, you know, and sometimes people say, well, how do you know this? Sometimes it's what coaches don't say. You know, he didn't say, you know, let's talk about other guys. He kept talking about Demetrius Robertson. So to your point, I think he will figure into the plan. I also think that was Kirby's way of letting the team know, letting the receivers know. I think Kirby is extremely calculated with what he says and what he doesn't say. I don't think he makes a mistake and says something by accident. And so, therefore, I read into that pretty heavily, that Demetrius will be a part of the plan. To what extent, I don't know. I don't know. How did he block downfield? At Georgia, you better be able to block.
Good point.
Believe it or not, they hold those receivers accountable for that. So,
good point.
You know, what will he do when he's not getting the ball thrown to him? These are things that have yet to be determined.
There was a very, I thought, fascinating exchange of the day involving Kirby Smart speaking about Julian Rochester, who's, you know, a former elite recruit from the 2016 class, a guy that I saw play in high school a lot, a guy that's been good at Georgia in his couple years on the roster thus far. But Kirby Smart was very explicit the other day, Mike, as you know. He challenged Julian Rochester to be, and I love this phrase, a difference maker. And you know, Rochester's one of those guys that can play a couple different spots there on the defensive line, and maybe one of those sort of X factors in terms of, is this a defensive line for Georgia that's as impenetrable impenetrable as it appeared to be a lot in the 2017 season. If Rochester becomes the difference maker, then, yeah, maybe that likely happens again. And if he doesn't, then the defensive line overall is going to suffer, right?
Well, to this point, he's not John Atkins. And, you know, Julian is a talented guy, no doubt about it. But at 6'5", that's kind of tall to be playing the nose guard spot. Not saying it can't be done. I covered the Outland Trophy winner, Tennessee, named John Henderson, that was able to control the center guard gaps. But I don't know if Julian's there yet. Kirby talked about that, talked about how that's an area that he's working to improve. Because, boy, when you're playing nose guard, you got guys coming at you from both sides. I mean, you've got to be an absolute rock in there. That's why you see sometimes those squatty, heavy, space-eater kind of guys playing nose guard. Their job is really to control the gap. And you might say, yeah, John Atkins, really have 26, 27 tackles. But the key was he held up those offensive linemen so they weren't able to get out and block Roquan Smith. And that's the kind of play you've got to have there. It's a very selfless position. A lot of underrated guys play there. The NFL notices them. They don't necessarily show up in the stat book. They don't necessarily get the statistics or the sacks. But they play a very important role in keeping the lineman off of the second level of defense there at linebacker. I don't know if Julian's there yet. I think George is going to drop off at that position. I think that's why Kirby's throwing so many bodies at it. I think that's why he's challenging this defensive line, because to me it appears George will have some drop-off in the interior defensive line based on what Kirby and Mel Tucker have said so far.
Final question for you, Mike. Maybe the most interesting thing to kind of come out of the on-field portion of practice, at least based on what the media got a chance to see, was Cade Mays working a little bit as the first-team left guard with Kendall Baker, I guess, sliding over to a reserve spot at tackle, I think the reporting was. This is probably not that significant in terms of predicting who's actually going to be playing come September, because Georgia rotates a lot of offensive linemen. But to see Mays, who's a very heralded freshman, getting this kind of look at practice, there's at least something to be taken from that. What did you make of seeing Mays getting a little bit of an exposure as the starting left guard yesterday after working most of the spring at right tackle?
Well, I mean, it tells me that he's working hard and he's doing what he needs to do in the classroom and in the meeting room, and enough that the coaches are going to give him an opportunity. I think they've probably promised everyone an opportunity. I think Kirby's, you know, very thorough. You know, when you recruit five-star players, I mean, I think it's pretty imminent that they're going to have an opportunity to play, that they're going to have an opportunity to showcase their abilities. And, you know, Cade was able to get in there with the first team and kind of show his stuff. And I'm not there to grade the film or see how the rest of practice went. But I wouldn't read any more into it than that. You know, Georgia's got to look at a lot of different options and possibilities. We knew Baker that was going to play some tackle just in case. You got to have that third guy ready. I mean, this is when you build depth, and this is how you win championships. You know, Georgia's not going to be a team that's unprepared. I mean, there will be attrition. I mean, that happens in college football. It is a contact sport, and you're going to lose some players from time to time at different positions. You know, we talked about McGee, you know, at the start of the conversation, and you've got to be prepared for that. And, you know, we saw in the secondary some guys playing some different spots the other day, too. But I don't read too much into that other than Georgia giving a young guy an opportunity and building depth. And, you know, again, Kirby Smart, this isn't a team that's being built right now to beat Austin Peay or to beat South Carolina. This is a team that's being built for a 15-game schedule and a return to the championship. That's how Kirby is coaching this team up right now, because that's the goal that's in Georgia's vision.
Yeah, I think that's well said, Mike. It's really great to have you here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We're loving your coverage there in Athens on DogNation.com, both the videos that you've posted, the stuff that you've written. Just really, really great. A great way for all of us to get excited about the upcoming season. Thanks for what you're doing, and we'll look forward to speaking to you again soon.
All right, appreciate the program, BA. Later.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Really good stuff there from Mike Griffith. Fascinating there in that regard. And we hope to be able to have Mike coming up at the big event we're going to be doing on August 23rd. I say hoping to, because obviously we don't know quite yet what the Georgia practice schedule is going to look like there that day. But August 23rd, we're going to be back at a Kroger, at the Kroger, the brand new Kroger in Cumming. the Bethelview Road Kroger Marketplace there with the Crowbar on the inside. It means you can actually come have yourself a beer and a beverage there at Kroger. How much fun is that going to be? Kroger Marketplace, Bethelview Road, the new location there, 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, August 23rd, as we do our Dog Nation season kickoff. I'm going to be there. Jeff Sintel going to be there for sure. A lot of giveaways there that night as well. A great off-air Q&A. And one of the things about these Q&As, we have Jeff and these guys for these events like this. A lot of the stuff they can't write, they'll tell you then. A lot of the stuff about the upcoming season, maybe they don't want out there for public consumption, but they don't mind, you know, doing, you know, in a sort of a private kind of sort of a looser environment away from the watchful eyes of cameras and things like that. You get a lot of that kind of stuff. If you want the real intel about what's going to happen this upcoming season for Georgia, and just a great way to sort of hang out with some of your friends and family that you've come to know and love here around Dog Nation. It's Thursday, August 23rd. There, our Dog Nation season preview kickoff right there inside the Kroger Marketplace incoming on Bethelview Road. In the Crowbar, we'll be setting up and having a great time with you that evening. I know many of you are already making plans to be there. We can't wait to see you all. All right, let me do a SEC through here. Some breaking news around the SEC as we're doing this show live here on a Wednesday morning. Let me get with here to begin with. Another LSU quarterback has decided to transfer. I was going to talk to you about Lowell Narcisse. I'll get to that in a moment. But the Baton Rouge Advocate had been reporting over the last couple of days that in addition to Lowell Narcisse, Justin McMillan, who at one point in time back during the spring was thought to be maybe performing as well as any of the three quarterbacks on the roster at the time, Justin McMillan has now officially announced his intentions to transfer. That's LSU down a second quarterback. The reason why I say second quarterback is because just yesterday, Lowell Narcisse, another one of those guys that's been competing now, and in Narcisse's case, it's actually been for a couple of years here. Narcisse made his intentions known yesterday to transfer, doing like so many of the guys do these days, kind of making it official on Twitter here, utilizing his Notes app. If you're watching, I'll show you what Narcisse tweeted out about this, basically, you know, thanking LSU and everybody for the opportunity. He was looking forward to showcasing his abilities somewhere else, but he's never going to forget, as they call the state of Louisiana, the boot. That's the phrase he uses there. So Narcisse gone, Justin McMillan gone. And I believe this is one of those examples of what you see from time to time in college football of what at first glance looks like a negative story actually may be a positive story. It's never good to lose players off your roster, but in this case, the transfer may lead to something that's overall better for LSU. I think that Narcisse and McMillan have seen the writing on the wall that Joe Burrow is going to be the starting quarterback. The only other quarterback to remain here now for LSU is Miles Brennan, who's not, I think, a serious threat to be the starter. He's been given every chance to do that and sort of failed to take the reins there in that regard. But his family does have deep ties to the state of Louisiana and the city of New Orleans in particular, so he's sort of an LSU guy through and through. He's not going to go play somewhere else. He's likely to become the backup, and Joe Burrow, the recent Ohio State transfer, is going to become the starter. And the fact that Burrow, at least seemingly at LSU practice, is this good this quick, I think for LSU fans is probably good news. And if you're a Georgia fan, something you've got to pay more attention to here. You know, Mike Griffin said a moment ago that Tyreek McGee, whose injury we talked about near the top of our program today, he says, it may not be that big of a deal. He'll be back by October. But when in October, if Mike's sort of prognostication here is correct, when in October does McGee return? He's already going to be missing for the, I mean, I'm assuming here, I'm obviously not a doctor, but it would seem, it'd stand to reason that he might miss the South Carolina game second week of the season. That's Deebo Samuel and Brian Edwards, two very good wide receivers. Missouri's wide receiver core, not as good as it was a year ago, but Drew Locke is still potentially a first-round pick. And LSU, who I just mentioned right there, if Burrow is a competent quarterback, pairing him with, you know, Ja'Marr Chase, Terrace Marshall, two very good freshman wide receivers, Jonathan Giles, the Texas Tech transfer, potentially pretty good stuff there for LSU. Let me move on here quickly. AL.com reporting about Alabama running back Najee Harris. He is missing practice right now. Matt Zenitz is the reporter there on the scene in Tuscaloosa for AL.com, letting us know the status of Najee Harris, who was a bit of a star during the national championship game. Matt Zenitz shows us the status of Najee Harris' injury. He says he's got a foot injury per sources, from what I've been told. Probably going to miss the next couple of weeks of practice, but seems like there's a good chance he'll be available for the Louisville game. So that's I think, the best running back on the Alabama roster, currently missing practice time there for the Crimson Tide. That's a story worth paying attention to. ESPN did an SEC preview at ESPN.com, and for all the conferences, they've looked at the conference dart horse that could make the college football playoff. The SEC representative here, according to ESPN, is Mississippi State. I know they're kind of a trendy, in vogue pick because of Nick Fitzgerald, and the media seems to love Joe Moorhead. Let me be very clear here that despite the fact that Mississippi State has a very good defensive line, I do not see a big year from these Bulldogs. I don't trust first-year coaches in this spot. I mean, even Kirby Smart was 8-5 in his first year at Georgia, so I'm not as high on Mississippi State, let me just say, as some of the other folks around the media are. And one final funny point to kind of close things out on. I thought John Adams, the columnist, longtime columnist of the Knoxville News Sentinel, had a very interesting piece looking back at Tennessee's 0-8 mark in the SEC a year ago, essentially saying, hey, it wasn't as bad as you might seem. He ranked like the 10 worst 0-8s in the history of the SEC, winless SEC marks, and he didn't have Tennessee included in there. So I thought that was kind of a funny piece from John Adams, and we'll make that your SEC through. All right, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pete's, one of the things we've been doing a lot over the last few days is taking a look at those pivotal figures for Georgia this season. If Georgia does dominate the division once again, who's going to help them do that? Well, we've been chronicling that as a part of our Own the East video series brought to you by Georgia's Own Credit Union. And now, a closer look at another one of those guys, and maybe one of the biggest of all, Tyler Clark. Take a look at this.
Georgia's Own Credit Union presents Own the East, and look at the names to know as Georgia tries to get back on top of the division here for 2018. Hello, everybody. I'm Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation's Chip Towers. We come to item number 13 on our list, which is the defensive lineman Tyler Clark. Chip, I love a good debate. This may be one of those names we could debate here a little bit. At 13, is there a chance that Tyler Clark's actually even more important than that for Georgia this season?
Yeah, but you know, we'll see as this year goes along, because Tyler Clark is really the only experienced defensive lineman on the interior defensive line. All respect to Jonathan Ledbetter, who we'll talk about at another point. But Tyler Clark is a mainstay on that defensive line for Georgia. And the interesting thing about Tyler Clark is, you know, when he comes here as a recruit, he was probably the least talked about between Mikael Carter and Julian Rochester and that very impressive defensive line class. It certainly was overshadowed last year by Trent Thompson. He had a lot of kind of baggage, a lot of question marks going into the season about him, but he was coming off a red letter season as a sophomore, and nobody was talking about Tyler Clark. At the end of the year, he ended up starting, you know, seven to four games or something over Trent Thompson, and had an unbelievable impact on that Rose Bowl game. If you can remember that, had a couple of great plays against Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl. I guarantee you those Sooners remember who he is.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, listen, Georgia fans are going to talk a lot about Clark this year because of the impact he'll make in 2018. But 20 years from now, Tyler Clark is still being discussed because hero in the Rose Bowl, one of the heroes, that's a pretty good level of cachet that he leaves his Georgia career with.
He is, and the question, you know, for Tyler this season is going to be, you know, how well can he play? Because, you know, he's going to have to play a lot more snaps. The one thing that Georgia's defensive line benefited for last year was being able to rotate so many players in and out of there. They're not going to have that luxury this year, so Tyler Clark's going to have to stay on the field a lot longer. Can he perform at the same level, you know, at 60 snaps as he was at 30 last year?
I think that's well said. A reputation that was in some way established in the Rose Bowl, Tyler Clark looks to build on that for 2018, and just maybe he could help Georgia own the East once again.
Own the East is brought to you by Georgia's Own Credit Union and Georgia's Own Visa Signature Card, which gives 1.25 points for each dollar charge and can be redeemed for cash back, gift cards, travel, merchandise, and more. Check out georgiasown.org for more details.
You know, we talked early in the show with Mike Griffith about the role that Julian Rochester could play for this team here this season. Kirby Smart wants him to be a difference maker. We think that Tyler Clark likely emerges as a difference maker for Georgia. If you want to go back to the Rose Bowl, where he really became one of the heroes for the Dogs out there in Pasadena, he's going to be challenged to maintain that same level of play throughout the entirety of the 2018 season here. And I sort of joked with Chip about this a moment ago, that you could make a case with him number 13 on that list. Maybe he could be higher. Maybe he could be ranked higher there, because obviously that defensive line going to be watched closely here this season. And Tyler Clark, along with Julian Rochester, they're both going to be big parts of that for the Dogs here this season. All right, we'll get ready to wrap up here. We do it the same way each and every day. We're always looking forward to what's going to happen in Jacksonville. Now, 73 days away, it's our Gatorator Countdown right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza. We love counting down to seeing the dogs clobber those lousy, stinking Gators again, because we believe on this program that a good dog fan is a Gator hater, and I'm glad to know that many of you feel the same way. Speaking of Florida, I also wanted to close the show out this way, too. I saw where Pete Futak from College Football News, and Pete's a guy that I like. He's a friend of ours here on Dog Nation Daily as well, although after this, maybe some of y'all may not want him to come back again anymore. He was on the Feinbaum show, and he was really kind of down on Georgia, saying that he thought that Georgia could lose to South Carolina. Georgia could even lose to Florida, believe it or not. He said Georgia's going to lose some games. I don't take this very seriously, though. As I said off the top of the show, there are a lot of national media people who don't quite know Georgia's young talent yet, but I believe they will soon. We'll see you tomorrow.